Pencil up. I'm one of the minority here from the e-learning world, so because I'm in the lion's den here with all you IS people. But actually, you're exactly the people I want to talk to, the IS people. I hope it's also of relevance to other people. I started my working life as a teacher in schools and universities, and my kind of the thing that really hit me very hard after a number of years of teaching was what a strong influence the structure of educational establishments had on what was possible to do from a teaching perspective. There was all sorts of kind of innovations that we wanted to do in the 70s, you know, giving away my age, that were impossible because of the way in which schools and universities were organized. And actually, that I don't think that's changed very much. But what has changed is that we now have technology, and that's added another dimension where technology makes promises to allow new pedagogies to be enacted, and technology allows us to organize things differently. And I think where we've ended up is in a sort of situation of some tension, where the force of the possibilities of technology are constrained by the inertia of organizations, and likewise pedagogy is constrained by the inertia of organizational structure. So I think we're in this rather strange position. The reason I liked the title for this talk was that it's talking about disruptive technologies, which I think comes from somebody's book whose name I can't remember at the moment, basically he talks about the technologies which can be recruited by organizations to help them do the things that they already do, but in a more efficient or more effective way, and disruptive technologies that actually force organizations to change. And our question, I think, for today is, what is e-learning technology, or the new technologies that are coming with Web 2, to think more broadly? Are they essentially there to be recruited to help us do the same things but slightly better, or are they there to disrupt us and make us actually rethink the whole mission? So I think we need to go back to first principles and just think about what are our institutions actually about. You know, if we were to start afresh and redesign the education system, how would we do it, given everything that we have now and everything that we know now? And essentially, the design problem is that we have a bunch of potential learners on the left who are motivated by a range of things, sometimes by curiosity, because they want to know something, sometimes because they want to get a particular kind of job, sometimes because they want to develop as people, mainly because they want to become increasingly empowered, usually a combination of all of those things. So that motivates people in our culture to go and try and engage with others to fulfill those needs. And on the other side, you have the bunch of teachers who have knowledge about subjects. They have expertise in disciplines and vocations. They have experience. They've done stuff. They're members of communities of practice, and they understand. They have understanding of the thing that the students want to understand. So they're models, if you like. And that's the task of the education system, is to bring them together, to put those two groups together in some kind of organized fashion so the right people meet the right people and do the right things, and that everything moves on. Of course, this all happens against a context, a background, a political context, a world of knowledge. There are economic factors, there are all sorts of other people, and there's technology. So there's an environment that this is kind of happening against. So the design problem is, How do we design a system that makes this work in the most effective way, given the technologies that we have? And the one thing that we can be sure is that the number of learners, because of economic considerations, will always be vastly greater than the number of teachers. So that's an additional constraint on our design problem. And the final thing is that the complexity of the requirement of learners, their individual learning needs, learning styles — I don't like learning styles particularly, but the variety of learners — will be greater than what the teachers can manage. So that's a design problem for us. And our traditional solution pre-information technology was to break things down into simpler problems. So we take the education system and we break it down into sectors. And then we take a sector like the HE sector and break it into institutions, take the institutions, break them into departments, and so on. Departments get broken into courses. So we begin to reduce the problem, scale the problem down. Eventually we end up with courses, and then courses can be done by students. and then we match the students to the course. That's the way we've done things. Now, we could, of course, think about maybe doing it the other way around, by matching the learning to the students. And there's a lot of talk these days about personalization, about, there's been talk for years about learner-centeredness. I don't see very much of it. I still see lots of courses and students looking for which course is right for them. But, you know, we have a problem of managing complexity. So I'm not knocking this. This solves the problem. The only trouble is that we end up not teaching students. We teach fragments of students. You end up with a student on, you know, on many courses. The student can be on different courses. They may be in one institution or in several institutions. They may these days be in several countries. So we're managing students in several countries, but those students themselves are managing, so we're told, courses that may be delivered from many institutions and many courses over their life. And we give them precious few tools to help them to integrate the learning that that they do on the various courses and the various institutions. So our technology has been primarily focused on the institution up till now. Now, each layer is regulated by the above. The education system regulates institutions through funding, through the resources it gives them, through its national planning, and so on. There are rules, there are quality regimes, we know all about this. And that works all the way down. Institutions regulate their departments regulate their courses, and so on. And what we've done so far, I think, with e-learning, in fact with all technologies, is we've sought the technologies that can support this way of doing things. And if you look at the technologies that we've adopted successfully, for example, the most recent one, the virtual learning environment, it maps on really well, the way it's been implemented, to this model. You know, courses are well represented within a VLE. The kinds of learning technologies which support more personalization, I think, have been resisted. And the kinds of technologies that didn't fit onto the way in which we organize things were resisted. I mean, the classic example is television. Television is a profound technology which has impacted on just about every part of our life, but had virtually no presence within the education system. It's amazing. You know, it didn't fit. It couldn't be recruited to the existing way of doing things. It was potentially a disruptive technology. Actually, I think it has been a hugely disruptive technology in terms of, you know, the kinds of people that we now teach, as opposed to the ones that we taught before television. Now, technology potentially allows, this is what we're told, more choice, more flexibility, a wider access, so you can access learning, you don't have to be physically present, you can access learning remotely, and potentially improve quality. I mean, if you didn't offer those things, we'd be wasting our time working in e-learning. It has to kind of offer those things. And technology, as we know, can be used for the delivery of information, but it can also be used for assessment, for certification. It can make learning more accessible to a wider range of people, and so on. The kinds of systems that we've so far adopted have been repositories of content, virtual learning environments, computer-assisted assessment, e-portfolios, and so on. So there are a range of systems that we're taking on, but that always tend to be systems that we can easily absorb within the existing way of doing things. And that includes within existing information systems department, services department. So the world that we see at the moment is that essentially the technology lives over there in the institution. And actually, most of the time, I'm going to generalize wildly today, so it gives you something to attack me for. We require the student to come with nothing. It's better for us if they come with nothing, with no knowledge, with no technology, with no email addresses, with nothing that they've done, because then we can start afresh and say, this is what we offer you. And that's kind of the way it's been. And in the sense, we had to kind of think of the world in that way, because it made life for us simpler. You know, we could then assume the students knew nothing, had never used anything. We could teach them how to use Windows 2000, even though they may be using Windows XP or something else at home. And then we give them the VLE, we teach them how to use that, we give them an email address, we give them an email client, which may not be the one they've used before. It's a lot simpler, but the world is changing. Students are now coming with a lot of experience. So we control the hardware, we control the software, we control the user interface, we control the whole thing. And then, because we've got that control, you know, we can fulfill our responsibilities with regard to authentication and everything else. That's the world as it is at the moment. The trouble is that this was okay even 5 years ago. It certainly was okay 10 years ago. But the world is changing, and the what technology potentially offers has become so huge and so complex that we as institutions can't afford to have IS departments that can deliver all this. You know, the kinds of things that are going on that people are beginning to do outside of institutions can't be supported. And the risk that we run is becoming a sort of technological ghetto. You know, outside, you students do blogs and Flickr and all sorts of other wonderful things, but then they come into the university and they get WebCT or Blackboard. It's kind of not what the students are used to outside. But inevitably, I think because of the resource problem, we can't hope to do anything other than that. We've got limited technical and support capability. You know, the top slice is a big problem for the university. Technology development is stressful for any organisation. Not forget universities, any organisation, to actually implement new technologies, to change practice, is stressful. So universities find themselves, and colleges find themselves, needing to constrain the use of technology, actually limit what's possible and what can be done. And inevitably, they rely on people like GIST to solve some of these problems for us, to provide us with repositories, to fund projects, to develop content, to give us the kinds of services that can help us to ameliorate some of these difficulties. And so this is the world. This is what happens inside universities. You recognize those logos. Do you all know the one bottom left corner? No, we know where it's Boddington. Hope you had to put one of the homegrown things in there. And this is what goes on outside. This is what the students are doing outside. The technologies, the artifacts. I just remembered I haven't turned my phone off. And the various systems that they're using. And wouldn't it be great if we could actually somehow exploit all of that stuff, even though there's wide diversity, and try and use some of that within our universities? It's interesting for me, I just kind of noticed that when Brian did his introduction, he said we're using all these technologies to support the traditional format. You know, it's enhancing it, but maybe at some point we'll be able to cross the line and actually not do this, do something which is even richer, but actually using technology, not in the support role, but to actually transform things. Anyway, that's an aside. So that's the world as we have it, as it is now. And that's the world as it might be if we were able to begin to exploit some of the technologies that we all know the students are doing. Wouldn't it be great if you actually said to your students when they came into the lecture, right, everybody, turn on your phone. You know, we don't say that, we say turn off your phone. It may happen. So, as I've already said, the problem for us, of course, is that students come still with varied experience. And it's very hard then to deal with the fact that there are some students who know more than we do and others who know nothing. But that is changing. It's changed. You will all have noticed it. Over the last 5 years, there's been a big change, and that will continue. You know, the change will, the people are using technology at home enormously, you know, 60% or something take up of broadband. They're using it at school, at home, but we ignore it. So the challenge for us is, how can we exploit the technologies and the skills that are beginning to happen outside? Another thing, which I'm not going to talk about, I think Brian, so I suddenly felt worried when Brian said I was going to talk about it, because I'm going to let him down, but I think that Rob is going to talk about this. Service-oriented architecture or service-oriented approaches. Now, at the moment, in institutions, we're very comfortable with implementing big systems. The student record system, the library system, the VLE. We understand that. It's kind of, you know, you have an Oracle database, you stick stuff on top of it. We've got the people, you know, we know how to work in that kind of mode. But my question is, do we actually need to be doing all of that anymore? Business certainly has realized that that by using big systems that they buy off the peg from elsewhere, you know, the PeopleSoft, the SAP type technology, that actually forces them to adopt the business processes that their competitors have got. Because they all use PeopleSoft, they all do PeopleSoft business processes. So they lose the competitive edge. And the kind of answer to this is to go to a more componentized web service approach, where you can choose the web services that you require for your business and you assemble them in the way that represents the processes that suit your business. So it gives you that competitive advantage back. You can customize your technology to do the things that you want to do. That's what's happening in business. GISC, as you know, prompted by us and others, has noticed this is going on and is now kind of investing quite a lot of money and effort in developing a service-oriented approach known as the E-Framework for UKHE, which then again potentially gives us the opportunity to customize the technology that we use based on web services. And that could be administrative technology, but it could also be learning technology. So there's the e-learning framework as a part of the e-framework. Now the point is, these web services could be hosted on servers in your institutions, or they could be hosted in servers in other people's institutions, or they could be hosted by JISC, or they could be hosted by commercial enterprises. And my question is, does it matter? You know, maybe it's time that we started thinking about the fact that we don't need to host everything. And if we start to think about we don't need to host everything, maybe we could even start thinking about, do we actually need to give our students an email address anymore? You know, our students now come with email addresses. Why are we still acting as ISPs? We used to be great ISPs when there were hardly any out there, but now we're beginning to become not very good ISPs. So I'm suggesting that we need to think again about what we do in information services and what we fund in universities to try and get the best possible kind of use of our skills, rather than doing things that are being done so much better outside. So we need to identify what are the services that are needed, analyze the processes that we think represent that we want to work, redefine some of these processes to exploit new technology, and decide where this technology should reside. It's a big challenge, it's a huge challenge. So I'm not trivializing this by any means. But the implications are that hopefully things will become better. You know, we can use better personal technology, hosted elsewhere, used by the students, things that the students are comfortable with and can bring with them from institution to institution throughout their life. And it permits us, as I say, to rethink the technical role of institutions. So instead of providing systems, we start supporting people in the primary activities of our institutions, teaching or teaching and research. So in your role for IS departments, a transformed service for teachers, what I think IS departments could be doing, is helping teachers to develop their practice. Now, I'm not suggesting that IS departments suddenly become experts in pedagogy and tell teachers how to teach, but what I'm saying is that we should be helping teachers to understand technology, to understand what's possible, help them to analyze the things that they want to do with their students and implement them in technology. So I'm talking about high-level staff development for teachers here, not this is how you use Outlook, or this is how you use WebCT, but this is how you think and use technology in a rich, high-level way. That's an important role that isn't happening, I don't think, to anywhere near the right extent in universities, and that, I think, could be a role for the new IS department. So identifying right requirements, obviously, is a key part of that. I think we could be working to extend our learning environments. I think the VLE idea will disappear in the next few years, and we'll simply have learning environments which have technology components in a service-oriented way. But those will need to be assembled, designed, implemented, and again, I think there's a role there, an important role there for IS departments to solve the unique problems that our teachers will be giving to us. I put in the yes to request, you know, this is the standard complaint, isn't it? You know, people ask for a service department for help. Service departments want to say yes. And I think if we begin to work in this kind of support way, yes becomes much, much easier rather than the sharp intake of breath, you know, when people ask for technical things that aren't permitted. And I think participating, this is a plug here for the, because obviously we're involved in the JISC e-learning framework, you know, I think every IS department should now get involved in this. This is important work. This is, I think, going to play a significant part in the future, and I think Rob is going to talk about this later. But at the same time, I think IS departments have a key role to play with learners. I think we have to help the poor old fragmented learner get joined up. You know, all these, as I said, all these little modules that the student is supposed to, you know, assemble over their life. And remember, I think it's very likely that there's going to be a huge increase in part-time students, students learning over a longer period. Inevitably, as the cost of education is passed over to the student, they're going to start working part-time and studying part-time. It means longer courses assembled from more fragments. I think we're going to start selling modules more than degrees. Maybe. But I think we need to help students then to manage these fragments. That's a different kind of technology. You know, and it's no good saying, we've got WebCT, or we've got an e-portfolio at our university. These students have to navigate multiple systems in different places. and somehow aggregate all that stuff and make sense of it. So there's a new technology there, and I think students need support to develop the skills and to, again, learn how to navigate technology to support them in their lifelong learning. So there will always be a skills development challenge. I think students will always have a technology requirement, some of which can be fulfilled at the institution and some elsewhere. I think we will come to a point very soon where we should begin to ask students to come with technology. You know, in the same way as we used to ask them to come with French O-level, I think we can now say, come with an email address, come with a blog, and come with a laptop or a PC of some sort. This could be a requirement. We could, in the interim period, help them to acquire these things, but I think at some point that's going to be a requirement. And then we simply register them. We register their email address rather than saying, when you come here, forget your Bolton email address, now you're going to use the Warwick email address. I just think that this collection of email addresses is getting silly. And so we provide access to services, to learning materials, and to learning activities and learning designs. The other thing, of course, is that as we personalize their technology and give it to students, this allows them to begin to integrate their non-education work, the Flickr and all the other stuff that I mentioned earlier, with their learning activities. So in other words, they use their environment to do their learning, which is hooked into your institution systems. So I'm proposing that we should stop being a hardware provider or an ISP or a database service organization, but become more of a consultancy, a design organization, and a support organization. That's what I see as being, you know, the crucial for IS departments. I'm not suggesting that, you know, forget everything, drop everything, tomorrow we do something different, but I think we need to start preparing for this new world, because I really think this is the way things are going to go. I'll just mention personal learning environments very quickly. I don't know how much time we're at still. This is something that we've been working on at CETIS for the last few months. I think that it's likely that a component of future learning environments will be this idea of a personal tool. It may be a personal portal or a personal application running on your machine, where a student can aggregate the fragments over their lifelong learning. Something like an Outlook, but an Outlook which is designed for education, where you can access content, store information about other people, and so on, and begin to develop this kind of, actually interact through that in your learning activities, and also store the results of those activities in a developing e-portfolio. So we're working on a reference model for what this personal learning environment might be. Obviously it's going to be standards-based, it's going to be able to interact with a range of web services. But the main aspect, I think, of personal learning environments is this idea of cross-institutional working. And if we design it well, it should hook into web services and other systems that universities and colleges are using. So to kind of wrap up, really, I don't want to trivialize this organizational change. I've been arguing about organizational change. In fact, I've probably given this talk many times over the last 20 years, because I felt, as soon as technology began to happen in the mid-80s, that organizational change would be forced on institutions, and I've been wrong. I don't think institutions have changed very much. There is huge inertia, and at the moment we still do the things that we do really well. But I think the pressures are just building and building and building. The pressures of globalization, the pressures of increasing the number of students, the pressures, I think, on institutions are still building. I don't know how long we can resist it, and I think the technology can play a huge role in helping to ameliorate the problem. But how long we'll be able to resist that, I don't know. I think that a key part of this will be this transformation of service departments, especially information service departments. And I think that part of that will involve looking at the new requirements for students in this new world, but also for teachers who have to work in this new world. And I just remind you that original diagram, that our job is, in the end, to bring these two communities together, using whatever resources, technology, and organizational systems we have at our disposal. It means you have to think about organizational design. And there are tools, and there are theories, and there are kind of methodologies out there. And all of us in our professional associations will know that. If you're a member of BCS, you'll see there are special interest groups on socio-technical systems design, and so on. So organizational design is part of the IS world. I like the viable system model, so I always give it a plug. But there's lots of other stuff. You know, we need to look at process design, process analysis, but return the focus. You know, so we focus again on that key task of bringing teachers and learners together. So my question for today is, you know, are we innovating for sustainability, to sustain what we already have? Or are we innovating to disrupt what we've got so that we can make something new that actually tackles the job better? There is potential for this complete redesign of the education system, but as I've already said, there's going to be huge structural resistance. Not personal, not individual, structural. I think that's an important point. The structure, you know, fourth in the sense, constrains us from doing the kinds of things that we might want to do. But I think in the end, if there's not sufficient return on investment in the technology, you know, big questions are going to be asked about why we spend so much money on technology. It has to deliver, and I don't think it has yet. Now, organizational change has to happen at multiple levels. I think it has to happen at the education system level as much as at the learning design level and all the levels in between. So what are we disrupting, the course or the education system? Takes me back to my student days. So I just throw that diagram up again just to say, you know, these three are the key kind of aspects, I think, of the education system. We are about learning, we are about pedagogy. That's the fundamental task of the education system. The organization allows that, but it also constrains certain options. And technology likewise allows some things to happen, but constrains other things depending on how we implement it. So that's our challenge. And just to summarize what I just said, final slide. You know, the education system was designed for another age. It's been around a long time, and it's been doing things pretty much the same way all of that time. But its organizational structure results in these fragmented students. And what we've done it so far is recruited technology to support that existing way of doing things. But we can change that. We can redesign the system. We can exploit the benefits that technology offers to enhance learning. And I think you people can be key people in this. Again, I'm talking to the IS people, but actually, it's all of us. It's the teachers, it's e-learning people and IS people. But we need to start with ourselves. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Oleg. That was all very challenging, a great vision.